This is Richard Harkness speaking from the NBC newsroom in Washington. The new emergency peace session of Congress has just received President Truman's legislative reconversion program. The president's message, 16,000 words long, is being read now in the Senate and House. Mr. Truman's program contains 21 major recommendations for congressional action. These recommendations range all the way from the controversial full employment bill, which he wants passed, to a suggestion that members of Congress raise their own salary. Well, here with me in our Washington studio are Robert McCormick and Lee Feed. Now, I will summarize the president's message for you. Mr. McCormick will discuss in more detail the military aspects with emphasis on veterans, and Mr. Reed will give you a report on the reconversion of the country economically from war to peace. Now, the president's message to Congress, looking at it generally, is rather a New Deal program. It is the kind of post-war plan we might expect from President Roosevelt, were he alive today. On post-war employment, Mr. Truman makes these recommendations. He wants Congress to pass two bills now pending. The measure increasing with federal funds unemployment compensation to $25 a week, and the full employment bill with its provisions for definite spending to make jobs. As a third recommendation for labor, the president wants Congress to raise the basic minimum wage of workers above the present 40 cents an hour legal ceiling. And also, on the subject of human reconversion, Mr. Truman wants the Fair Employment Practices Committee made permanent. And that, of course, will touch off a fight. He wants the Labor Department strengthened. And that, of course, would mean the end of the War Labor Board. And he wants the Employment Service kept in the hands of the government, at least for the post-war emergency. The president favors, too, a big nationwide housing program for low-income workers. He asked, too, for a major public works program to make jobs. Now, that sums up, in general, the White House program for labor. And it is a program, you will note, which follows the general line of action laid down by the AFL, the CIO, and the CIO Political Action Committee. For the reconversion of business, the president offers what he calls a transitional tax bill for 1946. Well, apparently, Mr. Truman opposes any sizable cut in our 1946 taxes, which not a few members of Congress want. That seems true, for he points out that even with the war over, we face a deficit this year in the Treasury of $30 billion. And then, still on business, the president wants Congress to abolish his old surplus property board. He asks in its place that Congress set up one single administrator to sell those $100 billion worth of surplus war goods. And the chief executive holds out a promise of aid to little business during reconversion. He has recommendations, too, to spur our foreign trade, our trade abroad. For agriculture, Mr. Truman wants Congress to continue price support commitments to the farmer. The president is asking, too, for broad authority for himself during this wartime peace emergency. He wants many of the veterans' war powers continued. Now, these deal largely with the OPA, with the right of the OPA to continue price control, with the right of the OPA to continue rationing. Now, this point goes, of course, to the very heart of the administration's anti-inflation program, so that's an important measure to watch. Well, Mr. Truman wants, too, general power to reorganize the government, to abolish, shift, and merge agencies, and this will cause a controversy in the Senate and House. Looking to our post-war military security, the president is asking Congress to continue the drafting of 50,000 young men a month into the post-war period. And he favors continuing our post-war scientific research. However, the president's message says nothing about the atomic bomb. That will be dealt with later, apparently, in a special message to Congress. Now, rounding out his recommendations, the president tells members of Congress that they are grossly underpaid. And he suggests that they raise their own salaries from $10,000 a year to $20,000. Now, this is one of the longest messages the president has ever sent to Capitol Hill. And so far, members have had no chance to study it carefully and weigh their reactions since they're still listening to it being read. However, this much is clear. This new peacetime emergency session of Congress, which convened only yesterday, will be one of the most important in our history. Now, to give you the military aspects of the picture, here is Robert McCormick.
On the military side of the measure, President Truman went into several subjects in considerable detail. First, he talked about his emergency war powers. He promised they would be done away with just as soon as possible, and that the agencies involved in administering them would be abolished. Most of the war powers will end automatically when the peace becomes completely official, and another batch of them will end when the war is officially over. Now, there's a subtle distinction between the two groups, it seems, but Truman says the time has not, and he emphasizes the not, the time has not yet arrived for a proclamation of the end of hostilities, much less the end of the war. And Truman says we must not wipe out his war powers too abruptly, for if this were to occur, he says, it would cause great confusion and chaos in the government. Turning to the draft, he urged Congress to keep it going. He said he thought present restrictions on volunteers should be lifted, and Congress should work up a powerful campaign to get recruits. But until enough volunteers are coming in to replace men who've been in a long time and away from home a long time, he says the draft simply must be kept. He says there are only two alternatives. Either we keep the men already in the service, keep them for an indefinite period, or we induct enough men for replacements. And he says we are obliged to occupy the countries we've conquered, whether we like it or not, just as a matter of self-protection. So he thinks it reasonable to limit inductions to men between 18 to 25 and fix their maximum term of service at 2 years. And he urges Congress not to declare the war over, because then all the men in uniform would have to be out within 6 months under the law, and the president says it would create an impossible demobilization problem. But all these things are temporary. His ideas on long-range security will come later, he said. Here are his exact words about the future in an obscure little paragraph in the message. He says, "It is my intention to communicate with the Congress from time to time during the current session with respect to a comprehensive and continuous program of national security, including a universal training program, unification of the armed services, and the use and control of atomic energy." That certainly is not a commitment to anything, but it seems to me a hint at least that he will have some program for merging the Army and Navy. Then he took up the question of taking care of war veterans. He reviewed what already had been done for them, their special life insurance and pensions and hospitalization and mustering out pay and all the rest of it. Then, he says, we must do more. Requirements for medical care must be liberalized. There must be more facilities for vocational rehabilitation and for education and training. The life insurance system must also be liberalized, and rates of compensation should be increased for certain injuries, including, he mentioned specifically, the loss of more than one limb. Also, he said he thought there should be a revision of the part of the Draft Act concerning the question of veterans getting their jobs back when they return to civilian life. In other words, he wants Congress to clear up the confusion over seniority rights, confusion that resulted from the provision in the law saying that returning veterans are entitled to their old job or new jobs just as good as the old ones. And he particularly stresses the value of setting up veterans and their families on small farms on government reclamation projects. A bill is pending to give veterans loans and other help in starting up such homesteads, and Truman says a number of farms can be made ready for veterans rapidly if this bill is passed immediately. And now Lee Feed will discuss the president's remarks on the job of reconverting to peace. Here is Lee Feed.
Well, the president's message lays down the basic reconversion policies for business and industry. Those policies are to hold wages and prices in line, and then to wipe out every government control except those needed to keep some companies from hogging our limited quantities of scarce raw materials, and then leave the rest to business and to labor. In other words, get the government out of way as soon as possible. Along with the president's message today went a report from John Snyder, the reconversion chief. It's marked Transition Phase 1, and it spells out and fills in the figures in the president's outline of the plan for post-war America. John Snyder, the reconversion chief, says that on the night the Japs surrendered, the War Department sent out 37,300 telegrams, canceling work on over 83,000 contracts. The Navy sent out 12,000 more cancellation notices. RFC canceled 900 additional contracts. And by December, according to Mr. Snyder, munitions production will be down to less than $1 billion a month. Mr. Snyder says the government's really on the job in getting its contracts ended, and that the only thing that's holding up fast settlements, which was recommended by Bernard Baruch in his report last year, is that American businessmen aren't filing their claims fast enough. He says the government's ready to get its machinery out of privately owned plants, too, and it has teams out in the field to do the job. On what Bernard Baruch calls the human side of demobilization, the Snyder report says within 10 days after the Japanese surrender, 2,700,000 men and women quit their war work. He says within another 6 or 8 weeks, somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million more workers will be jobless. And on the other side, he said that 900,000 have shifted from peacetime jobs to peacetime jobs, in the same plants, and that the U.S. Employment Service has 500,000 jobs listed over the country. He says the Army expects to discharge 6 million men in 10 months, and the Navy 2,800,000. And there in those figures is written the size of America's number one post-war task, to provide the jobs that make prosperity for all of us. As for what the government's doing to encourage business, Snyder points out the huge Army cancellations on orders for raw materials. Our factories will need those raw materials. He points out the loans the government stands ready to make or to guarantee. He points out the War Production Board's cancellation of all but 160 of its controls, where there were 650 at the wartime peak. He points out WPB's constant check on the changeover job to eliminate bottlenecks, and the willingness on the part of the government to raise prices wherever necessary, but always provided that this doesn't lead to inflation. Both the president and Mr. Snyder are deeply concerned about skyrocketing prices during the period when millions of Americans with war earnings and savings in their pockets will be battling each other for the chance to buy the first automobiles, the first washing machines, the first electric toasters, and so on. The president says they, meaning the people, are entitled to buy at prices based on our traditional system of high output and low unit costs. And he says without some general stabilization, the consumer cannot be protected. The president warns of great insistence from many interested pressure groups. And so Mr. Snyder tells us OPA is tightening price controls in areas wherever necessary, that OPA will widen the use of dollars and cents pricing and pre-ticketing, which have been effective in the past. And he says this, broad removal of price ceilings cannot take place until the threat of inflation is past. Many prices during the next few months may soften under the shock of reduced war expenditures. But Mr. Snyder goes on, the real test of price control will come when reconversion gets into full swing, with employment and payrolls increasing, and before production begins to balance demand. Very obviously, what the president and his men are trying to avoid is another economic roller coaster ride for this country, with another 1929 bust at the end. As the president points out, we must be sure this time not to repeat that bitter mistake. And now on the food question. President Truman says rationing will be removed as rapidly as the supply situation will permit. John Snyder adds, rationing of tires, meats, fats and oil, sugar and shoes will have to continue until supply begins to balance demand. And the president says, we'll not do away with rationing foods if that threatens our relief shipments to Europe and other distressed war areas. And as if to put a conclusion to both the president's message and his own report, Mr. John Snyder talks about the road ahead. He says, plain speaking and decisive action have helped us all to have confidence in each other and confidence in our common future. The problems ahead are among the most difficult this country has faced, and will require the cooperation of the best talent throughout the country and in the government.
You have just heard a special news program featuring NBC correspondents Richard Harkness, Robert McCormick, and Leif Eade. This is the National Broadcasting Company.